This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That's I Feel Fine by the Beatles from their album Beatles 65. Sending that out to a regular listener I met over the weekend named Bill. Before the Saturday's Home Opener, I was out at Crosstown Concourse, and they had the record swap going on that day, among other things. And I met a guy, man I'd never met before, a regular listener named Bill. Had a nice chat with him, and that is the album he was walking out with. And he was leaving with was Beatles 65. And a good purchase, a good guy. Shout out to him. Also fits for the Grizzlies fans after the opener.
Did you walk away with an album from the Crosstown?
I did not. I've bought too many records lately, and I just decided I don't need to buy any records today. I did look at some records.
Well, it was quite the extravaganza Saturday night. You've written about it. I tweeted the piece out. If anyone wants to relive it in all of its joyous glory, read Chris's piece. From Saturday night. You did, I don't think you answered the question, but it's certainly got to be very high on the list of best home openers ever.
Yeah, I didn't have time on deadline to, like, you know, test that claim, but it sort of felt. Certainly this is a season unlike any other in the sense they've never had what they hope is a gap year before.
Right.
And so the idea of we weren't good, but we're supposed to be good, and if we're not good, like, it's really going to be a problem. Like,
right,
it's a
right.
different kind of complex emotion than I think that's ever been around the franchise going into a season. And to have that sort of complex sort of stew of emotions and anxieties and whatever be met in the home opener with a game like that, I feel like it probably was.
It was. And to have so many highlights. I mean, it was just one thing after another. And you're exactly right. There was this joy. Well, ultimately, once we learned that Jaren and Ja were playing, to have them back.
Right.
But there was a nervousness to it all as well. It was compounded by, just spent a moment on Friday night, third quarter against Houston, when you're looking at that, what happened, and one game is one game. But rebounding issues, the physicality, that stuff, you wondered. You know?
Wasn't like we had a bad shooting night. That was we got overwhelmed athletically in a way that seems repeatable by some teams.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I went back and actually rewatched those offensive rebounds, and I probably won't. Maybe I'll write about it as a secondary thing, but at this point, probably not, since it didn't repeat. But it was, I mean, some of it was awareness issues, like you didn't box this guy out, you're being lazy on this, the kind of stuff that coaches normally talk about. But some of it is just like, you know, Jock Landale's taller than Marcus Smart, and Jabari Smith Jr. is taller than John Conchar, and Tari Eason is more athletic than Jake LaRavia. A lot of it was just that, you know?
Yeah. No, I found it to be worrisome, and I was reasonably worried about Saturday night, and then what happened happened. Do you really, by the way, do you think Jock can decide to play because Grizz Twitter is telling him, you know, like,
I think probably it's not something you're supposed to say, but I think a lot of times when it's a game time decision, it's, you know,
it's not
crystal clear which way it goes. And, you know, when we were walking out and, you know, apologies to Drew if I'm speaking out of school, but when Drew and I were walking out of the building Saturday night, we were talking about, you know, Ja and the games ahead, and we sort of both guessed that he probably will not play either tonight against Chicago or maybe Wednesday against Brooklyn, because Wednesday, Thursday is a back-to-back.
Right.
Probably doesn't play one of those games because of the thigh thing. So we'll see.
No, I asked at the start of the, because it's a nice week for Grizzlies fans. You got these games tonight and then the back-to-back. And I was asking if you were thinking strategically and you want to see Ja, which do you buy tickets for?
I think Milwaukee would be, I would rate that the most likely.
That's the last one.
Yeah.
The three, that's Jolloween. Not that they align with a promotion.
Right.
But that is also the night of a promotion.
That would be like, you know, if you would get more rest. If you take off tonight, that's 2 days rest or whatever. And if you take off Wednesday, that's still 2 days rest, even if you play tonight. And
right.
So, yeah.
He may well take off tonight. But you're right. It's a conversation that they have before any game. And how do you feel as part of it? And do you want to go? You feel like whatever.
Well, he came out and did. So when I entered the building, I was getting on the elevator as I was getting off the same elevator to turn to go to the practice course. I was like, okay. At that point, I knew he had not made a decision not to play because he was going to the practice court.
Right.
He was going to test it out. And then he came out for his actual shoot around. And by the time you come out for the shoot around, I think you've mostly decided to play. But I was sitting right there and I was watching him, and he was kind of frowning a little bit. He was sort of like moving his hip and like, you know, shaking, you know, sort of, you know, rotating back and forth on his legs. He had a little bit of a frown, and I wasn't even quite sure then.
What'd you think of Ja? What'd you think of Ja Saturday?
Ja has been, I mean, he hasn't been making any jump shots yet, so we'll table that. But everything else, Ja's been awesome. Ja has been absolutely gangbusters inside the arc as a scorer, as a playmaker, as a cutter. I think the defensive effort he's been putting in has been noticeable.
Clear, absolutely.
And so I think other than, like, he hasn't made a jump shot, Ja has been spectacular.
Yeah, and didn't have to, 16 minutes? Again, 16 points, limited minutes, but absolutely spectacular when he's out there. It will be interesting to see how the minutes, and we'll talk probably more about this later in the week, but how the minutes are carved up. Because so far, he's, like, they all played, they didn't really need him. They didn't, Jaren, Dez, and Ja, they didn't really need him to play heavy minutes, but they all were under 30 again.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is true is that strategically, you asked Taylor Jenkins about that. He had a response. I'm going to write about it. So the relatively deep and flat rotation is there's a strategic component to it that I think it's interesting to look at and see if it's going to how long it's going to carry into the season. But it's also true that they've only played three games.
Right.
And two of those games, like the last six, the games were decided in the last 6 minutes, and that has an impact on the minutes you end up playing. Like, Ja would have come back in that Houston game. Like, John, Dez, and Jaren would have been in at the end of the Orlando game if it's a nip-and-tuck game. And so there's some degree to where, even beyond what they're doing strategically, the star minutes have been pressed down a little bit. But they are very clearly leaning into, we want to play super fast and stay fresh, and we're going to play a lot of guys, at least right now.
Jaren makes his return, and as you point out in your piece, they were plus 26 with him. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a mirage. I mean, sometimes, I mean, Brandon Clark was like a plus 12 or whatever, and like the first, and it was bad in one of these games. So I only cite stuff like that if it backs up what I see, you know, in the game. And what I see is that, like, they just play beyond Jaren's own, and I think he played pretty well, not great.
Right.
He just makes things flow better, and he makes other things better. Like, they can play Santi at small forward in some of these lineups because Jaren's there. You know, their defense tightens up a little bit because Jaren's there. He just, you know, I wrote this 3 or 4 years ago, and it remains true. To me, Jaren's sort of like a skeleton key. He sort of unlocks different stuff that you otherwise would struggle to do.
I'm putting off the man of the night for a little bit here. Zach Edey continues to make his way, but continues to some progress.
Yeah, the Edey thing is interesting. And I may give this a little bit more time because there's some other stuff I want to get into. But the Edey thing would be more concerning if they needed more out of him right now, and they don't really, because of the way Jay Huff's playing, the way Santi Aldama's playing, because Jaren's back. I think what's highlighted for me with Edey is a reminder that he played 4 years in college. He's still a rookie. And, like, rookies usually take time, and this is going to be maybe a little bit slower process with him. It doesn't necessarily change my opinion of the outcome of that process, but my take on, like, the length of the process and sort of the way the journey is going to go. But I think with these other guys playing well, like, the idea of starting Zach Edey and playing him 15 minutes to me seems totally fine.
Jay Huff is critical to this because he's been spectacular and was.
Jaren's back now too,
and Jaren's back now. And the Jay Huff stuff. He's fun, but more than fun. I mean, that was so much fun. The two reverse dunks were ridiculous. Yeah. He's been fabulous.
Yeah, I mean, he's shooting probably 50-something percent through three games from three. I don't think he's going to shoot that for the season, you know, but he's a viable shooter. Whether he's having a night where they're going in or a night where they're not going in, he's a viable. He's clearly a real shooter,
right.
and that matters. He's clearly someone, I don't think he's a great defensive player, but I think he's 7-1 and has got a little bit of lift, and he can contest stuff at the rim. He can block shots. And he just has a good feel for the game. Like, I think he is really, beyond the three-point shooting and the shot blocking, which is the sort of the foundational stuff with him, and part of this may be coming from Virginia. And in Drew's piece he did on the coaching staff, one of the things I think if you read closely, you noted one of the assistants they brought in was a guy who'd been at Virginia.
And it seemed like it was – those were connected, too.
Yeah.
The decision to go get Jay Huff seemed to be connected with having this
maybe.
Kind of
that is not maybe. As crystal clear, but I think it may be.
Right.
But my point was that the kind of, like, motion, cutting, passing, general the broad style of play they're trying to implement is something he is comfortable with and familiar with. And you can see it on the floor. Like, he's got a good feel for the cutting and the passing and, you know, these cuts for the backdoor dunks and stuff like that. Like, he really fits into that flow really well.
So of the three dunks, there's Marcus Smart from beyond half court, reverse dunk on the fly. That was fabulous. There is the Jaren drive scoops, and he dunks over two Magic and that one over his head. And then there is the stolen jaw drives scoop and feeds him for the
this reminds me of the I'm gonna really get esoteric here for a lot of listeners, but back in the good old days of NBA coverage, the Free Darko days, the first Free Darko book, it started with a manifesto, and one part of the manifesto was something like some forays to the basket yield not points but should not be denied entry into the kingdom of highlight, you know, blah 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 blah, and that was one of those.
So tell
it's
folks
not on the
what
scoreboard
happened.
but it exists on our hearts
and tell folks what happened. And had that not been stolen by the officials, wiped from the, would that have been the Marcus Smart one, which is the best
one? No,
of the three?
I think the one the underrated part of that is that Jaren didn't make a simple pass. He made a driving dish dime. He dropped a dime on a drive. That's real playmaking. We haven't seen a lot from him. But the reverse dunk over two people in traffic?
Right.
No, that's it. That's
that
the
was
play.
It. That
that's
was the
play
one.
In the game.
It was absolutely sensational. Honestly, both Jay Huff and Scottie Pippen Jr. seem real. Don't they?
I think they are 100% real. Again, play's going to fluctuate. They're both playing particularly well right now, and I'm not saying that's going to happen every game. Everyone goes through rough patches. But, like, Jay Huff has been good, like, in the G League for 4 years. Like, I don't understand why the Denver Nuggets had this dude on their extended roster and were not putting him in games, given what they were playing with. I don't understand it. I think those guys may have been, like, teammates on the South Bay Lakers for the Lakers 2 years ago. And, like, look at the Lakers' depth. They got Bronny James on main roster. They couldn't find room for Jay Huff and Scottie Pippen. I think they are totally real. I think they were great finds on two ways initially in both cases by this front office, and I think they're going to help the team all year.
So Santi has been really good in two of the leading scorer in two of the three games, and Brandon Clark is
spotty in preseason, I think Santi. I mean, Santi right now is their number two front court player. He's not going to start. They're starting Zach Edey, which I think is appropriate. That's the way I would play it. I would start Zach Edey, and then I wouldn't play him 20 something minutes unless he was playing well or whatever.
Right.
But Santi right now, like the question we were asking before the season, like who's the fourth best player on this team? I think that's a very fluid designation. Right now, it's Santi Aldama is who that is, and it could be Santi Aldama. He has the talent level where he could be that guy. He has thrown his candidacy
into the
yeah.
It is I'll tell you what though, Marcus Smart made some plays Saturday. Like he looks like
he's a guy who, like, the box score doesn't look great, and just watching him play doesn't look great.
He is out of shape.
But if you're watching the game closely, he does have plays. An elevated feel for the game and all kinds of the whole quote doing the little things. He really does. He does the little things. In a way that I think can help the team. I'm still of the mind that, like, by the end of the season, I sort of think Vince Williams should probably be starting for this team. But I think Marcus Smart can help this team.
Well, Vince Williams will help dramatically in the rebounding, which is clearly a weakness. Honestly, when you see the way they play, I'm even more persuaded that Vince Williams is going to fit perfectly into this, you know. So then you've got some other guys. Jake has really done not much, nothing really. And Jalen Wells, honestly, I understand they want to go 11 deep, but he's a disaster defensively. And I don't know. It's interesting to me. The challenge of playing this deep is you're giving minutes to Jake LaRavia and to Jalen Wells, and that doesn't always work out so well.
I think both of those guys, they're in competition with each other. They're not in competition ultimately with Vince Williams and Luke Kennard.
Right, exactly.
And so I think, you know, it's interesting to see there's a real pecking order contest, and whoever is ahead of the other one, and Taylor Jenkins says he doesn't do pecking order, but let's get real. You do, there is a sense of like some players are better than others and the better players you play for.
right.
So the pecking order contest among like Jalen Wells, Jake LaRavia, John Conchar that's sort of happening now, it's going to matter because whoever is higher on that pecking order is going to get more playing time over the course of the season. But when Vince Williams and Luke Kennard come in, they're going to slot in above all those guys. Yeah.
There will be injuries though.
That's what I'm saying. Right, if you're the 11th man in a 10 man rotation, you're going to play almost every night, you know?
The fans asked for Yuki. The fans got Yuki, and Yuki got lit up.
Yuki,
like, got your point was that he's too short to play.
It's like worse. Offensively, it's better because he's exciting. He can really pass the ball. Defensively, it's worse. Jacob Gilliard,
worse.
And like Gilliard would get after it, he'd get steals, but like over time, it didn't matter because guys would just take clean jump shots right over him, and like there's nothing you could do about it. And Yuki was instant.
It was
like, just draining shots
Howard
right over
just
him.
Comes in and says, "I'm playing against a 6-year-old."
So the Yuki's a lot of fun, and I think the fans love Yuki, enjoy Yuki, and I think even more importantly, the players on the team enjoy Yuki.
Do. Yeah,
John enjoys Yuki. I'm a little, having gone through this with Kenneth Lofton Jr., who I think had real NBA potential, even if it didn't work out, whereas Yuki, I think, has none. There's a downside to the, like, fans chanting for the guy. I think that can, you know, it was fun in game one, but after a while, I think it could get annoying to the coaches and whatever.
Right.
And I think it can be counterproductive to the player. And if Yuki, I don't think it matters, actually, he's never going to be good enough. I think it was counterproductive to Kenneth Lofton because he felt like, you know, I'm a cult hero. I got to get on the floor and take shots and not, like, planned in to be the fourth best guy in a lineup. With Yuki, it's ultimately not going to matter because he's just not going to be an NBA player. I hate to say that, but it's just true.
Taylor Jenkins was, I wish he had, was asked, do you feel pressure to play him in that moment? And I thought his answer was very good. He said, the players earned that moment. Like the players.
He didn't say Yuki, and they said
no,
that.
No, he said the players earned that moment for themselves and for everybody. So they earned that moment. I thought it was really, I thought that was really good. So you and I, now that we go, that they don't have a media dining room, they have a voucher that they give you.
Yeah.
What did you choose?
Kinks are being worked out, but we're going to get there.
What did you? I had some difficulties, but
I had difficulties both nights. Worked out. I've gotten food both nights.
What did you choose to spend your $18 on?
I did. I did a couple slices from Rockin' Dough, and it was good. Good arena pizza.
Yeah. I did the high end burger. That thing.
See, I think I may do the high end, the hand breaded chicken tenders. I may do
the
high
end burger was not worth the. It was, and not only that, I didn't get a drink. I just got the burger and fries, whatever that high end burger is that's on the.
And you had to pay more.
And I had to pay another dollar, it wasn't that great.
Right.
So next time I'm doing, it was just handy. So next time I'm doing something else. All right, got the Bulls tonight. I haven't seen. What are they up to?
I think they've won a game. They're not an 0-4 team. They're like, I don't know. I think they're 1-2. Is that right? Yeah. Lonzo Ball's back playing basketball. That's kind of the most interesting storyline with them. Zach LaVine is healthy and looking good. And if Zach LaVine's healthy, he's like a real scorer. Like he could go off for 35, 40 if he gets hot. So you got to look out for that. They have a lottery pick who's not doing less than Zach Edey, not doing much in Modest Bozelas. That team is not going to be very good. We've already seen them in preseason. You know, that team is not going to be very good, but if they really, 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 really want it, they could probably win 32 games and like avoid having a good draft pick and still not be very good. So that's Chicago Bulls basketball these days.
What did you, by the way, think of the show Saturday night? Because the on the court show was better than anything.
Well, the court show was so good, you sort of forgot about the rest.
Yeah.
I'm glad the Quad City DJs were there in person. I can't confirm or deny, it's not the right word because it's not my information. I can't report either way whether Michelle, Tamika, and Tanya came with the Quad City DJs to the game. You have no idea what I'm talking about. That's one of my fun references. Classic trios in world history. Michelle, Tamika, and Tanya from Come On and Ride It. Love the Quad City DJs. I am not always the fan of all the really Memphis rap stuff. It's not necessarily my taste, but I do like Project Pat.
Right.
It's a good time.
I thought it was a good time. Amazing to see. It was sort of interesting to see throwback. I guess first night throwback because it's the 30th night theme of this.
I have mixed feelings on the Vancouver.
Yeah, I do
stuff.
Too.
I feel like the Vancouver stuff is good for selling merchandise.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's ultimately that good for either city necessarily.
Right.
So I don't love it necessarily.
Anyway, great. It was a great night. And if you want to relive it all, you can read Chris's piece over at the Daily Memphian. You got to take a break. Back on Jeff Cocker Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Jeffrey, I broke out my Peter Millar jacket today. This is the jacket that I have from Oak Hall that I've now given to my son Ben and my son Peter and my brother Ben. I love it so much. It's one of those, what do you say, pleated, plaid, what do you call it? Knit, what's that word? What's this word I'm looking for here?
It's quilted.
Quilted.
Yeah, there you go.
Quilted's the word I need. It's beautiful. It's green, a nice sort of fall green. It's just keeps me snug, looks stylish. I actually never have in my whole life have looked stylish, but now there are moments when I can, thanks to the folks at Oak Hall. And listen, fall is here. The holidays are coming. No better time. They still have the quarter zips and the hoodies and the collegiate colors. And Jeffrey, if I'm looking around, let's see. Ole Miss still alive? Memphis still alive? Tennessee not just still alive. They're right in the thick of it. Arkansas, they got this in Arkansas colors as well. They had a big win over the weekend, so you can get in there for that. The clothes are absolutely beautiful, but the secret sauce, as I've said a million times at this point, the people, they are deeply committed to what they do. You find it's so funny in retail now. You turnover and turnover and turnover, and people have been at a place for 6 months, and they go, you know, the stories and the commitment that the folks at Oak Hall have to their customers and to making people look their best is really extraordinary. So head on in sometime this week and say hello to our friends at Oak Hall. Get yourself a new sport coat. Perk the wardrobes up headed into the holiday season. All right, Jeffrey, a couple other things we have to get to today. One is Tigers play Alabama tonight in the Rocket City Classic. This game is on ESPN Plus, so you can watch it 1 week from tonight, Jeffrey.
For reals.
They play for reals. Missouri. That's sneaking up on us. That's coming fast. This is obviously the last exhibition game that they will have, and they are playing a formidable Alabama team that is injured, yes, but you know what? They were injured when they beat up Wake Forest the other day, 98-77. I believe Mark Sears will still be playing. Mark Sears, who averaged 21.5 points a game last year. I don't know if you remember what Seth Trimble did to Memphis, North Carolina guard, in that first exhibition, 33. He hung 33 on Memphis. And so we'll see. It was interesting because after that game, Penny came out and said explicitly, had that been happening in a real game, we would have focused on him.
We didn't run our stuff.
We didn't run our stuff either defensively or offensively. We just basically, he basically said we rolled, but we just wanted him to go out there and play basketball. Well, I don't know. Like they play a week from today. So presumably they'll be working on their stuff. Wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
Not necessarily every bit of it, but
yeah, I mean,
well, isn't that the point of these games is to fine tune your stuff?
Or if there's particular stuff you want to work on, like use the Grizzlies, for example, they obviously wanted pace and all that to be a part of their offense, but they're not playing at like the same breakneck pace they did during the preseason because they were clearly like working
right
on it. And so like, I can see where if there's,
but like if they're literally running none of their stuff, what is the point of these exhibitions?
I mean, there's questions. Is this a dress rehearsal? Like, yeah. is this the getting ready for game day? I'm with you. I guess where I just get annoyed is so many of these exhibitions that we're seeing around the country, mm-hmm. I just get annoyed. It's like, why can't we play this as a regular season game? Like, these are all games I'd like to see.
Tennessee played Indiana. You would like to see that.
Yeah.
Ole Miss beat Illinois. I don't know. Like, I don't mind them having a I don't mind them having some exhibition games.
I don't mind them having exhibition games. I just think
and what's interesting is that now that they've become meaningful exhibition games, now you want them to be real games. When they were against Lemoyne Owen,
yes.
Now you didn't care that they were
exactly.
real games. Anyway, there you go. A couple things to look for tonight. Memphis should be healthy, so we will see there. Musa will make his debut.
Tyreek.
Dane Danger was Tyreek, we'll see what happens with Tyreek, if he's paid at halftime or not.
Mm-hmm.
If the check clears at half, yes. If he comes out the second half. Dane Danger was legit bad against North Carolina, dreadful against North Carolina. And he's a guy who people had touted as, oh, I think he's got a lot more to offer now that he's at Memphis. And it was really dreadful. And so Penny said that he tweaked his back and he got treatment at halftime of that North Carolina game. So we'll hope that with a non-tweaked back that he will be more of a factor because offensively they don't have much else inside. Like there's not much, and then the 3-point shooting,
I'd like to not see Colby Rogers go 2 of 11, yeah. But like at the same time,
I don't think he will. Yeah. But you're going up against an Alabama team that is going to fire up a million threes and make half a million, right? And
at least 40% of it feels like.
So at least 40%. Memphis was 5 of 23 against North Carolina, and again, they're not going to be Alabama. They're not going to be either a prolific or a particularly good shooting 3-point team. I don't believe you're not going to look up and they're going to be a top 20 in the country in 3-point shooting percentage. But there are players on that roster who should hit threes. Colby Rogers is the most notable, and he was 2 of 11. Against North Carolina. If he goes 2 of 11 again, will I worry about him? Not even then, not particularly. Although you'll wonder if, you repot the plant in different soil, if it starts to look,
Is there a reason why? Yeah.
Is he getting different kind of looks, different off of, whatever that is accounting for the fact that he's all of a sudden not the shooter that he was previously. Anyway, that is happening tonight. Again, it's on ESPN Plus, the Rocket City Classic. In
what time is it?
7.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, 7 p.m. So there you go. That is happening. All right. We've talked about. We have not talked particularly about the World Series. You cannot get more dramatic than a walk-off grand slam. That was absolutely.
Freddie Freeman. If you need to show your kids how you celebrate a walk-off grand slam,
that's it.
That's the one I'm putting.
That's
in.
It.
Admire your work.
It was
elite
beautiful.
Bat flip. It was everything.
And deserved to be celebrated.
It was a walk-off grand slam.
In the World Series.
Yes,
yes, exactly right. So what do you think of the Yankees? Are they what sort of trouble are they in?
I mean, I do want to see what do they look like at home, because the thing that stood out to me throughout both games was after really kind of like the first inning of game one, I felt like the Yankees had a lot of loud outs. Like, man, they're seeing it well. And then other than Soto's home run, I just didn't feel like they had as many competitive swings, whereas it feels like with the Dodgers, every single guy in the lineup is just locked in. Shohei's injury is going to be something
right.
to pay attention to. I mean, he's
will play.
They say he's playing.
They say he's playing.
But like, I kind of want to see when it gets to New York, does the crowd energy change things? Does that put more pressure on the Dodgers? And do we see... If we see a continuation tonight of what we saw on Friday and Saturday night, where it just felt like the team that I believed in to get the clutch hit, the timely play, I just felt like the whole time it was going to be the Dodgers. Like I think back in the ninth inning when the Yankees really put some pressure on them, I still just never really believed, like, okay, they're getting a hit here.
Turning to the NFL, obviously the moment yesterday was... the Hail Mary in Washington.
Yesterday was one of those days that it was kind of like the college football week we had a couple weeks back, where you looked at the schedule and nothing really like super fired you up, but it turned out to be pretty fascinating.
So the Hail Mary,
mm-hmm.
Jane Daniels to Noah Brown.
The Hail Maryland, I think that's what it
was. Hail Maryland, 52 yards. It was truly extraordinary. Now, first of all, of course, it was set up. The Bears had that third and goal from the one,
mm-hmm.
where they handed it
to their backup center.
to their backup.
And I don't even
center.
Know you can actually say that they handed it. It looked like it never even got there.
Execution wasn't exactly
not there.
Not there. Now, do you go back and when you're looking at everything that went wrong to lose this game from Chicago's perspective, do you circle that? They did get the stop and then they scored. You know, they got the Scots, they got the stop, they scored, they took the lead. So do you circle that? Is that part of the narrative or not?
I think it's part of the narrative because it was as the game.
It's part of the narrative, a blown execution game you should have won.
Correct.
Just another thing.
And head-scratching decision.
And a head-scratching decision. So anyway, so they get they come back, they score, two-point conversion, and take the lead. So now you've got 19 seconds left. And that,
Jeff, they added five back.
Yes, that's true.
Remember?
Right, exactly right. 19 seconds left at the own, starting at their own 24.
Yeah.
Took two throws to get to the 48.
Yes.
That in of itself was a brilliantly done.
Yes.
Also part of the narrative, right?
Yes.
And then that last play, and maybe y'all have heard all this, you've been paying attention. Jaden Daniels held the ball before he released it on the Hail Mary for 12.79 seconds. He scrambled 40.7 yards. 40.7 yards. That is more yards before a TD pass by any quarterback in the last 5 years. Like, he was just running around back there. It was brilliant to be able to, not only did he get the pass off, when he got it off, he was able to totally get into it. Like, he created space for himself.
And he had a clean throw. Like, it wasn't like he was trying to avoid, like, at that point, he can just launch and let it
fire. He did what he did to get a totally clean throw.
Yes.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers gets credit for his Hail Marys. And, of course, there is a randomness, no question, to a Hail Mary. But, like, if you're going to give a quarterback credit for a Hail Mary, I'm giving Jaden Daniels credit for this Hail Mary.
Yes.
So, throws the ball. It goes 65.9 yards in the air, which is the third longest completed pass in the air since 2016. Like, everything about this play was absolutely extraordinary. It took 17 seconds from beginning to end, that play, which is an eternity in the NFL, gets tipped. And, of course, Noah Brown hauls it in, tipped by the corner. Tyreek Stevenson tips it.
More on him in a minute.
Later apologizes. This is the first game this century where both teams score touchdowns in the final 30 seconds. Absolutely incredible. Who you blaming?
So
we know who we're crediting. We're mostly crediting Jaden Daniels, right?
It is interesting to me that whenever we have these types of plays, it the first instinct is always, how did you let that happen?
Right.
And
that's why we go to who do you blame?
Correct.
Right.
I got to start with Tyreek Stevenson. Like, do I really think, like, for 100% certain that he is the reason the play worked?
He was taunting the fans.
No, but at the same time, doesn't it show if you're more concerned about taunting the fans than the last play of the game?
My question is this, and maybe I'm missing it, but he's taunting the fans as the game as the play begins.
As the play snapped.
But he runs around for what did I tell you? What did I tell you? Like
12.
He runs around for 12. So in the end, whatever he was doing as the play snapped. As the play was snapped, like, he had all day. Like, that taunting didn't influence what he did during the play.
See, this is where I disagree
a
little bit. I think it changes your positioning. I think he was supposed to be the back
was
man.
Was he supposed to be the back? Do we
you're
know that
always,
for certain? Do we
not,
know that he was supposed to be? There's supposed to be someone behind the play.
Correct. We do know this. You are taught that I have to have somebody behind the deepest man.
Yes.
Because of exactly what we just saw, the tip. There was nobody back there.
There was nobody back.
And there's one guy who's standing and taunting the fans. And then realizes.
And who, by the way, did apologize then on social media. Got to be better.
Right. But, like, he immediately takes off. And at that point, like, you've lost the advantage, which
no
is
yes.
I have leverage on you.
Right.
And so now I've given that up.
It was incredible. I mean, it was just riveting to watch. It was.
What was fascinating to me about this game is this game sucked until all of a sudden it didn't. And then it was awesome.
So you mentioned that it was a week, and we said that, like, really looking forward to this game, to this week, the best quote unquote game was Bills Seattle, which is not, you can imagine that on any week being the fit, as you're anticipating it. And you can imagine that on a given weekend being the fourth best game, but the best game, I mean, in Dallas, San Francisco maybe was supposed to be the best game, except for the state that those teams are in. But then, so I come out of this weekend more struck by the misery of certain teams than by the happiness. I mean, obviously, the most striking thing is what happened with the Commanders and Jaden Daniels, right? But what I'm really struck by is the misery of the Jets, who've lost five in a row, the misery of the Cowboys getting their ass kicked, the misery of the Bengals getting their ass kicked by a team that was supposed to be in emotional disarray, and the misery of the Colts, honestly, who has a quarterback. Like, if Tyreek Stevenson weren't getting all the grief for taunting the fans.
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson for going 10 of 32, 2 of 15 in the first half, and then asking out of a game because he's tired.
It was truly, yesterday was also highlighted to me by bizarre stats. Like you said, 2 of 15.
2 of 15? Like, he's an NFL quarterback.
It was like 2 of 15 for like 90 yards and a score. And you're like, wait, what? And then you had the Lions weird stats, because like we talked about the Navy game where Notre Dame didn't have a bunch of yards because they kept getting short fields.
Right.
Like Jared Goff's like 2 of 4 for 2 touchdowns or 3 of 5 for 2 touchdowns. They had like 9 total passing yards and 3 scores. Like yesterday was kind of a day of weird stats. But Anthony Richardson's also, you're in the same spot that like yesterday, to me, it's like the other thing that's striking about yesterday is if I'm a Browns fan, like I want to curl up and just go to sleep.
Scream. I would be screaming into my pillow. There's just rage.
Correct. Because everyone knew what the problem was.
Everyone knew. And everyone knew that Jameis should be playing.
Yes.
And this happened exactly. And they beat the freaking Ravens.
Yes. And the other flip side of it is, I think it's of the 7 starts not made by Deshaun Watson in the last 7 Browns games, they've thrown for 300 yards 6 times. They were a playoff team when Deshaun Watson got hurt.
Well, it's funny. I happen to have a bunch of Facebook friends who are from Cleveland, and they all hate Haslam. Hate Haslam. Among other reasons, he's moving the team out of Cleveland.
Correct.
Not like...
But he's moving him to the suburbs where he can have the whole development.
You've got this the stadium on the lake. It like the lake is part of the Cleveland.
Correct.
You know, you want the snow water coming off the lake.
Yes.
You want all that. And he's taking it to a frickin' to the suburbs. And he's ripping the team out of downtown Cleveland and forcing Deshaun Watson on you.
Yes.
Double bird you.
Yes.
Like that would enrage me. And now, by the way, Winston will win enough games to F up the draft pick.
Sure.
You know, not that there's a quarterback necessarily in the draft. Anyway, it's funny. Driving in, I was listening on Sportsmanlike, and Evan asked, why can't Jameis Winston be Baker? Why can't he be Sam Darnold? Why can't he be? And both Canty and Michelle both said, oh, no, we know who he is. He's not that. He can't be that. Why not?
Wouldn't this be the same argument for Sam Darnold and for Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, if you had asked me 2 years ago what they were, we'd say, oh, we know what they are.
Right.
Same thing.
No,
well, I don't understand why he is denied the chance, why the idea that he could get better is so far-fetched when we've literally seen it from quarterbacks across the league.
I want to be fair because I don't know what Jameis' motivation was in free agency. Because it's entirely possible Jameis and his agent sat there and said, listen, the Watson thing's going to end at some point. We don't know when. We don't know how. You could be in position to be the guy. The rest of the roster is still pretty good, as we saw.
Yeah.
And so if you're Jameis and you're knowing, I probably am only getting one real crack at this again. Like, it wasn't like, you know, Darnold knew, okay, there's a chance I could become the bridge guy.
Right.
But it's not like Darnold was sitting there going to be the starter until J.J. gets hurt. well, if you're Jameis, don't you try to like navigate your way to the best situation possible so that that way when you do get probably what is your final chance.
If I'm Jameis, I'm not enraged. If I'm the fan base, I'm enraged. But if I'm Jameis, yeah, you played it exactly right for Jameis. But now what can he be the next version?
Yes, because that roster's still pretty good.
That's what I think. But I don't know why.
But like, why? My thing is like,
I mean, he did throw 30 picks into a season.
No, I understand that. And he. By the way, we still had some Jameis moments yesterday. But he's also not playing, and so now all of a sudden he's back in there. But if you're the Raiders, like, I think what to me the shame on the league is like, this guy's better than at least 10 other people that are starting. Like, why has he been riding the bench?
It's crazy. And I got to give you credit. You 100% called the Jets. You called the Jets before the season began. It is really wonderful. Like, some, you know, there's this whole why do good things happen to bad people? That's a whole book, right?
Yes.
Or whatever. Is it a book?
The question of suffering.
Why do bad things happen to good people? It's one of the eternal mysteries of life. It really causes you to question the mere existence of God. And yet we all puzzle through that and find our way, maybe to faith, maybe not. And one of the things that can maybe restore you in that journey is when bad things happen to bad people. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a little symmetry there anyway, right? Like, it's there at least makes a lot more sense. And so Aaron Rodgers, it's just beautiful. Just beautiful. Listen, you can cap off this week with a chance to win $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins over at FanDuel. If you bet on tonight's game, Giants at Steelers. Again, if you're new, bet $5, $150 in bonus bets if that first $5 bet wins. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. Can the Russell Wilson magic continue? Jeffrey's not a believer. Go
but
to FanDuel.
Blessed of a believer in the Giants.
FanDuel.com, Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older in Presence, Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions do apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Of course, it is Monday, so that means Fitz will join them today. Norton Hurd joins me on Jeffrey Wright and company. Jason Munns will talk about that Tiger game with us when he joins us during hour number one. It is Monday, so that means Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, buddy. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. For now, work is done.